everyone. I am Manny.
And I'm Wayo. Welcome back to the Kink Buffet Podcast. This is episode 9 of season 3.
We are one episode away from 50, which is the magical number that the Start Your Own Podcast website said would be where you were legit and you'll hit critical mass and you'll become rich and famous.
Are you going to buy me a crown so I can be a pretty, pretty princess, mister?
Ooh, I love messing up the faces of pretty, pretty princi. That's plural for princesses. God. So, we are talking this episode about something that I'm surprised we haven't covered yet.
Well, as far as it's kind of have sprinkled throughout all the different episodes, but
it's weird because we have this podcast that talks all about polyamory, and we don't make an entire episode about jealousy until like episode 40 something. And now we have this, well, it's also a podcast about BDSM and DS and relationships, and we're at episode 49 before we do a deep dive on
trust.
Jealousy and trust could have been episodes 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of circling back to these. I don't think at this point we're going to cover anything new, but most people aren't going to listen to every single podcast. They're going to pick a topic of interest or that is difficult for them or that they want to learn about. And so since trust is an issue, I think that if they're interested in this, we can sum up the bits and pieces we've covered.
Sure.
That's the goal.
And with the theme of being January and a new year and all the restarting and coming back to basics, it fits.
Yeah. So I think let's start. We both come at trust from a different perspective because right off the bat, you don't trust until you've been shown that you can. You're not trusting until proven otherwise.
Right.
I enter every new relationship with every person gets a clean slate, and I trust them unless they blow it. Both of these are what works for us, mm-hmm. But let's start there. So you come into a relationship not trusting. Why?
I just have a long history of people letting me down, I guess. I, especially from my longest relationship, it was, I guess, kind of like a coping mechanism. Like, I really don't even get my hopes up about something that we discuss and make plans about because I'm not sure if it's really going to come through or not until it's actually happening, so.
Well, and that has changed the longer you've been with me.
Yeah.
Because
it's getting better.
I mean, do I ever say anything and not do it?
No.
Okay. But it's still hard for you. Mm-hmm. So you think it's a coping mechanism? Is that like a way of protecting yourself?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I don't think that's a bad plan in some areas. Like mm-hmm. When it comes to BDSM, I mean, you don't just meet someone on Tinder and let them tie you up in their cabin in the woods where nobody can hear you scream. Right? I mean,
although that sounds really hot. No.
So you do have to do, but I don't know how much of that is because you don't trust somebody. Certainly, the trust with that person can grow, but the steps you take to protect yourself aren't about trust. They're just about common sense that humans are flawed and we're not perfect judges of character, and therefore we take steps to protect ourselves.
Right. It does not come from a place that I'm a vulnerable female and blah, blah, blah. Because I feel pretty confident that I'm resourceful, and if I needed to find help, if I was in trouble, that I could do that. Now, physical-wise, I'm not of large stature or, you know, athletic or anything, so that might be an issue. So I do take precautions on letting people know where I'm going to be for my safety and stuff like that, meeting people in public. So all of that comes with the trust as well before I will go to somebody's home or some other kind of private setting.
Well, I got you. I got you. And that a lot of that has to do with they haven't demonstrated trust yet. But the steps you're taking, I don't think is because you don't trust them. It's because there are just certain steps you take to protect yourself, period.
To be smart.
To be smart about it. My approach to a new relationship is the opposite. I am a incredibly trusting person, much to your annoyance at times, with people we met. And it's for me, it's just a philosophy where I navigate life with the idea that I would rather be burned and I would rather have people ruin their trust with me and fail me. I would rather have that happen by going through life being a confident, believing people, trusting person than protecting myself and getting burned less, but not getting to have the happiness that comes from thinking the best of everyone. I think the difference in us when it comes to this, especially in the BDSM world, I think a lot of that just comes from I'm a top, you're a bottom. I'm a dom, you're a sub. You have more and different things to lose when trust gets violated than I do. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I can certainly have trust violated and can be hurt by it. I could have somebody go public about what happens in our personal sex life. I could certainly have somebody who is hurt because I reject them, who can say things that aren't true. Like, I can be hurt. But that can happen in any relationship. You, on the other hand, are more vulnerable. Do you think that's partially why you come into it with a higher wallop?
Yeah, certainly when I entered the community, I started to look for play partners, and I made sure that I checked references and vetted them with other tops and people that they've played with to make sure that the play experiences I was going to have were going to be safe and that they weren't known consent violators and that basically I was going to have a good time and not be harmed.
Have you had success with the people that you've played with?
Yes, but there are also very many that I chose not to because of red flags that I was alerted to from the community or from watching them play with somebody. But, you know, my own observations.
So has it been, or have you found it important then to not be dead set on playing with somebody or playing next Tuesday? I mean, you're not committed to anything. You're willing to toss out an evening of play at the drop of a hat.
Yeah, always. For my safety, I would rather not than engage with somebody that I'm not comfortable enough with.
See, I think that is one of the things that where people get into trouble. I think they have blinders on. They think that this dom is going to be their only opportunity to get this kink met. Or they're at the dungeon and the thing they want to do that's turning them on right now has to happen tonight. And they're not always willing to have an evening where you go home or be able to write somebody off because there's red flags or they've been warned.
Yeah, there's very few kink skills in the community where that person is the only one that knows how to do it. So there's no scarcity mindset that needs to be around. Like, if you want somebody to paddle you, there's a plenty of people that have toys that they're willing to use for that purpose. So, I mean, it's just a matter of finding personality matches as well as somebody who's got the kink skills you're looking for.
I think that could be harder for guys than women, just because of the traditional or non-traditional sexual dynamic. There's more scarcity for men than women. Men, at the same time, are simultaneously less likely to be harmed physically in an encounter, too. So maybe there's a little bit less to risk for the men, but I think the idea of having blinders on, I mean, I see this in the vanilla world all the time. I mean, guys are get with women because it's that or none. There's that scarcity model that a lot of men find, especially the depending on the person you are, the man you are. There's certainly men out there that have options and have no problem meeting people and have play partners, but a lot of men don't. So I think extending trust or turning, you know, ignoring red flags, I think can be harder, but I think you still got to commit to it, right?
Yeah, I can see that from the male perspective, or even a male submissive. I mean, the potential for harm is still less. It's not none.
Right.
But, yeah, you can be a little bit more forgiving or a little bit less careful, but I think the scarcity's still not there. And if you seem to be somebody who just will take anything from anyone, it's a little bit less enticing for the ones that are interested, because then you're just looking for a kink ride or, you know, just one-off play. And a lot of people want to build relationships and get to know the people that they play with. So that might not be the best way to approach it at all.
I think one of the best things a person can do, in the kink world or not, and boy, am I a hypocrite, because we've all, just about all of us, have failed in this area, but listening to our friends. Because our friends don't have the same blinders on that we do.
Yeah.
And our friends are objective. Our friends have another set of eyes and another set of instincts. I mean, have you ever honestly heard of a relationship where somebody is with somebody, none of their friends like that person that they're with, and that person has a happy, successful relationship? I mean, I'm not saying it's never happened, but have you heard of that happening?
Yeah, I sure didn't live that one, so I can't speak to it, but
no, I mean, that's,
yeah,
you know, blinders aren't good. But so going into meeting people right off the bat, I mean, we're approaching trust differently. I have an openness to it, but because I have less to lose. That does not mean, however, that choosing a play partner doesn't come with risks for a top or a dom. You'd still, and this isn't even a question of trust violation, really, because it's implying that the person does something with intent. But if I trust somebody, if they're not mentally stable or have a level of emotional maturity, they could harm me. Not physically, but they could harm me in other ways without intent. Like, they haven't actually violated trust. They're just unable to process their emotions properly. And I've seen it come out really poorly. So trust is also, I'm from my perspective, I have to also apply it to trusting their ability to handle it. That's not trusting them or their character. That's just trusting their ability to, if I play with them and I have a sexual relationship with them, can I trust that they will keep at the distance I want to keep? Not everybody can. So that's trust in a sense, isn't it?
Yeah. And negotiation. So, like, when I am meeting with somebody new, you know, I automatically put the stuff out on the table that there's a polyamorous relationship in my life and that they cannot expect exclusivity from me. So that's a level of trust. Like, I have to trust that when they say, oh, I'm okay with that, that that's really going to happen. And they're not going to try and want something from me that I can't provide.
Yeah, that can still get tricky.
Yeah, it does.
Just people are imperfect. Mm-hmm. But that kind of leads to the next part of what trust is, which is honesty. Mm-hmm. And with our relationship, with the relationship part, not the bedroom part, honesty is one of our, like, our three key tenets that we live off of.
Right.
You trust me fully.
Yes.
Why?
Because you've earned it.
How have I earned it?
You've never told me something that you would do or provide for me that you haven't. And you've laid out plans that had very specific points, and everything has always gone according to the way you planned it, so.
And I think, by the way, that's not an accident. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the only way I can do any type of relationship. One of the things that was important was I wanted to say things that made you interested in me, mm-hmm. that made you attracted to me, that made you want to have sex or do scenes or play whatever with me. Mm-hmm. I wanted all those things from you. But in order to make this successful, I had to think long term, mm-hmm. which meant not always telling you what you wanted to hear.
Right.
I mean, many times I told you things that you didn't want to hear. Mm-hmm. For example, you're now traveling with me full time. We hit it off right away. Like, yeah. We hit it off instantly. And I told you that it was going to be 6 months before you would travel with me. Mm-hmm. Because my experience in the past is I had met people while I was traveling that seemed really, really awesome for a day and a half. And next thing you know, they're traveling with me. By the way, I didn't have a single friend that thought that was a good idea. nor am I exaggerating about the day or two. I mean, that's multiple times that I've done that. Mm-hmm. And so I decided this time, ahead of time, it was going to be 6 months minimum before I made the decision. I didn't tell you that you're traveling with me in 6 months. I told you I was making the decision in 6 months. Mm-hmm. And I, in order to do that, I ran the risk of you saying, well, this guy doesn't really like me.
I don't
want to
wait that long.
I don't want to wait. This person's not serious. I question his feelings for me. Mm-hmm. Not to mention, you know that in the past I'd met people and taken them after 2 days.
Yeah.
And now here I am telling you, well, I'm not doing that for you.
Right.
So I ran the risk of that not being okay. The trade-off in what I got in return was I did exactly what I was going to say, and you can trust me because I didn't lie.
Right.
I didn't make promises I couldn't keep. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
But that's risky. Growing trust means
calculated risk.
It's a calculated risk.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say, by the way, that's a simple suggestion here is just be honest. Mm-hmm. But there's different types of honesty.
Yeah.
And I could have spun this in a way where I didn't lie to you. For example, I could have said, I would love for you to come with me. Mm-hmm. I need a little time to think it over. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that would have pulled you in a little closer to me because now you're close to going with me. I know full well that it's going to be 6 months before we're going to go, but I didn't lie to you. I didn't say to you we're leaving next week. Mm-hmm. I could have blown smoke up your ass. I didn't want to do that. I wanted to establish our relationship as being based on reality. Mm-hmm. I also expected the same from you.
Right.
And you had said that's hard. Right? Not that you're a liar or a dishonest person.
I'm just very guarded.
You're very guarded.
So when you ask things, I'm not immediately forthcoming a lot of the time. But with you, the trust did grow and evolve, and I don't have any trouble telling you anything anymore.
But you did tell me things right away, because I asked you to. Mm-hmm. I said I want the opportunity. Let's figure this out right away. If I'm full of shit, I want to, you know, you should know right away. Mm-hmm. So you tell me, you are going to be honest with me. You are going to tell me these things. Some things you've never told anybody. Mm-hmm. I said, give me the opportunity. And if it turns out I'm not the right fit for you, then you've lost nothing. I'll just go.
Right.
That was really important to me, because trusting you, wasn't just you being honest. If you had said, I don't want to share this with you now, that's not dishonest. Uh-huh. But that's not extending me trust. And so, you letting me in and taking the risk of fucking this whole thing up mattered.
Yeah.
That was hard for you?
Oh, yeah.
Why? By the way, I ask questions. It's not that I don't know the answer, but I think it's relevant to the conversation. Why was it scary?
Well, it goes into the feelings of just knowing that the possibilities are there that I'm going to get let down, or I'm going to say something that's going to be a deal breaker for you, and then, like, the buildup is for nothing.
So it's just risky.
Yeah.
I think part of the trust, when we talk like this, is that it's not just me not leaving because you tell me something. Mm-hmm. It's me proactively reassuring you how okay it is.
Right.
Do you agree?
Yeah.
The thing about trust and honesty and jealousy and all these, they're not in a bubble. There's two people in a relationship, and it is both sides. You know, I think of the stereotypical argument you would think of a couple having, where one person says, well, why don't you trust me? And it's possible that the other person has trust issues, but it's also the person that says, why don't you trust me? They also haven't created an environment where the person can trust. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say you can't fail. We all fail. But it's creating a playing field where this can exist. It has to be that way. I mean, most people are guarded to some extent. Like, I'm on the far side of the spectrum as far as extending trust. But even that's not a blank check for every single person. I just try to be a trusting person.
Right.
It's still not open to everybody. There are still situations where I have to see it before I feel it. But I will extend the trust automatically. But I'll do it with doubts. It's a tricky one, but it's a dance. It's a two-person dance, right?
Yeah.
So how does that carry over into a DS relationship? Is it different because of our power dynamic?
Very much so. Because I have to, by nature of my need to submit, trust that you're going to provide what I'm needing. So
I can't fail you in areas where you have given up power.
Right.
That's a big part of this, because the Dom has a big responsibility. I think the submissive often has the harder job, because it's harder to let go and give up control. Mm-hmm. But there's more work involved on the Dom side.
Right.
Because once the sub lets go, the Dom has to do the work. I mean, I think it's harder, personally, I think it would be harder to be smacked on the ass with a cane until I was purple and wealthy. I think that's a lot harder than creating a scene. But there's certainly more work involved in creating the scene. The sub does just have to take it. Mm-hmm. Right? They have to mentally take it and give it up. I'm not suggesting that it's easy. Mm-hmm. But there's more work involved on my end. But that's also the role that I'm taking on. That's the role that I want. But I have to constantly make sure I don't fail. And I have failed at times, correct?
Yeah.
I don't think it's often, but I've had moments. I'm not perfect. Mm-hmm. But I've also had to be able to mop those up in a way where you continue to trust me.
Right.
How have I done that? Does you still trust me? Let's explain what I mean by that. So I'm in charge of conflict and conflict resolution. Mm-hmm. When we have a conflict, it is my responsibility to remain under complete control of myself, the situation, making sure it gets resolved in a way that's we both feel good about. Right? It needs to end with us not fighting, it not escalating, and you feeling validated and heard and not blamed and not attacked and closer to me before than after. Right? This is what I have to give you for this to work for you. Right?
Yeah.
And when that's happened, the vast majority of time, I'm in complete control. Mm-hmm. I have had several times where I've gotten upset.
Right.
And
just a few.
Yeah, but zero is better than a few. Mm-hmm. I'm not perfect. I can feel emotions. I can fail. And when I've failed, what have I done? Why do you still trust me? I mean, here I am in charge of resolving the conflict and keeping it from escalating, and then I escalate it. Why do you trust me next time?
Because you take ownership of it. You don't pretend like it didn't happen or that you didn't really mean it to come out that way or something like that. Like, you take responsibility for your actions and the way that they affected me and assess how you can do it better. Like, if you just said, well, that's just the way I am, I'm just gonna get mad when this happens, then there's nowhere to go from there. That's just where it's gonna be, and that doesn't make an environment where the safety is there.
Yeah, I think it's important. I personally find it a sign of strength when someone acknowledges their failings. In fact, if a person could acknowledge their failings before anyone points it out, I consider that extremely high level emotional maturity and communication skills and relationship IQ or whatever cliche you would read about in a
buzzwords.
Whatever buzzwords.
Yeah.
That's been one of the things that's been important to me, is that when we have had, I mean, we've only had a few arguments.
Yeah.
And we're together 24/7, like in a car or in a tent or in an Airbnb.
Right.
I mean, the goal is to have zero arguments. I would like to have zero arguments, but if they happen a couple times a year, I'm not going to chalk that up as a failed year. I'm going to chalk that up as a successful relationship while identifying that there's always places to get better. Mm-hmm. But it's been really important to me because I know that anytime I fail, in my role as a dom, we are vulnerable to you losing trust in me. And if you lose trust in me, this whole thing falls apart. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And so my responsibility is, I need to, when I fail, I need to do everything from that moment on perfectly. I have to. I can't, it can't be, you know, 80%. I can't take responsibility, but still drop a couple things that you did. Or, I mean, I can't do that. It has to be an all or nothing. I either have to be responsible for it, exactly what happened. Or it's, I'm going to lose something that matters so much to me. That's not easy. But I consider it a sign of strength when someone can do that. And the fact that you view that as a sign of strength and not a sign of weakness is why it works. Because on your side, you also have to extend that trust. Or maybe the trust was never lost because just me being human once in a while doesn't end your trust. But either way, you have to do your side too. You have to forgive and you have to have an objective view of what happened. Mm-hmm. All of this is two people.
Yeah.
I mean, trust is not something one person does, not in a relationship. So, I mean, that's what it is. It's about honesty and self-assessing, fixing when you fail.
And allowing it to ebb and flow. Like, it's not an all or nothing thing when there are, of course, certain infractions, like, because we're polyamorous, if you chose to hide that you were having a new relationship or something, that would be a violation of trust. That would be major. But, you know, like, a miscommunication or something does not cause the whole thing to unravel.
Well, okay, so there's two different things here.
Yeah.
Because one has intent and one doesn't. Mm-hmm. Intentionally lying is intentionally violating trust. Mm-hmm. That is a whole other level that would be a lot more difficult to come back from.
Mm-hmm. If at all.
If at all.
Yeah.
But failing because, I mean,
mistakes happen.
If you're feeling anxious, and because you're feeling anxious, you say some things that hurt my feelings. Mm-hmm. Because you're feeling anxiety. There's no intent there.
Right.
You're not seeking out to hurt me or deceive me. You're just, you're a human, and you fail sometimes. Mm-hmm. And if you can come back from that with an openness to, I failed.
And I want to do better.
Yeah, I mean, I would never have a problem with that. If you were lying to me on purpose, I don't even know how I would respond. I mean, we would, like, this whole thing would be seriously in question. Mm-hmm. I mean, lying can't be part of a relationship, any relationship, but not this one.
For sure.
So, I'll tell you one of the things, too, I think is important when you're taking ownership, too, is not sugarcoating stuff. Mm-hmm. For example, this is a pet peeve of mine, but I just see everybody do this. When they're apologizing for an argument. If someone says something mean, for example, they always say, oh, I didn't mean it, I was angry. Mm-hmm. And I always call bullshit on that. Like, I have a problem with that. That is dismissing responsibility. Because almost always the correct answer is, I did mean that. At that moment, that is how I felt. You know, if I was angry and I said, well, screw you. I want to break up with you. Uh-huh. Don't say later, I didn't mean it. What you should say is, in that moment, that is how I felt. It is not how I feel now. It is not how I normally feel. But I did mean that at the moment. That's ownership. Mm-hmm. Dismissing it is anything but that. I always find to be a cop-out. And a lot of people do that when they argue. When they take responsibility, they always, not always, obviously, but they want to hold something back. Mm-hmm. They want to dig their heels in. The same way, you're right, I shouldn't have gotten mad and yelled. It's my fault. I'm responsible for my own actions. But you really shouldn't have said that thing that caused me to do it. It's like, fuck, you had it perfect until that moment where you pushed it on the other person. Mm-hmm. And so that self, like, taking responsibility, but actually taking responsibility, not pretending you are, mm-hmm. I think is the key to all of it. That's how you come back from anything.
Right.
You have to. So there's the trust in the relationship. What about in, and that's in the DS relationship, and we even, in poly, it's the same thing. It's honesty.
Yeah.
You know, we're just going to be honest, and if we're not honest, we have violated trust, but if we stick within what we've agreed to, we're not. What about in BDSM?
Trust is big in BDSM. Like, we play with impact and pain. So, I have to trust that you're not going to do more than I can handle, and you have to trust that I will notify you if I'm getting to that point and know when it's there and when it's not.
Well, that's the starting point, is that mm-hmm. it doesn't go past where you want.
Yeah.
Hold on, let me rephrase that. Because you can purposely choose to play in the gray area, which you can negotiate that I want to go past where I would normally stop, and the person, it's consensual because you've agreed to go past that point.
Right.
But the point where, you know, it's all hands stop, safe word, you're out, it has to stop. Mm-hmm. The negotiation has to be adhered to perfectly. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, that's an extension of trust as well.
If a person says they want to use this instrument and this instrument and that instrument, and you say no go on the third one, mm-hmm. when you're tied up, you cannot bring out that third instrument.
Right.
That is a consent violation, mm-hmm. period. Mm-hmm. Not acceptable.
Right.
And if you do that, It might seem like on the outside, I mean, you're probably not facing criminal charges for it because you already agreed to be tied up and whipped.
Right.
But on a personal level, you cannot be trusted. You're going to lose your play partner. Mm-hmm. You're a prick. I'll take a stance here and say, if you agree to something in negotiation and then don't follow through while the person's tied up, mm-hmm. screw you. I don't find gray area there.
Right.
As far as that person as a partner, your reputation's going to be hurt if the person speaks out. Mm-hmm. Everything about that is not okay. I also think that you need to play, and this is the responsibility of the dom, the top, in the play dynamic, is that during negotiation, it's your responsibility to make it so clear that the other person understands. Because we all know how to play with words. Like, mm-hmm. I could easily want to do something, and I could beat around the bush, and I could phrase it in a way where technically you agree, and then I do this thing that you didn't think was going to happen. But I asked you this one thing, and you said yes, and you go, oh, shit, I guess I kind of agreed. That's a freaking manipulation. Mm-hmm. And it's not hard to do, by the way, other doms. It's not, you're not clever when you do this.
Right.
Right? I mean, it's not hard. Right. You can do this, but that's not ethical.
Right.
Now, I'm going to, before you think I'm a little too Puritan on this, I am going to come back to this, because you can play around with this, because the idea of mind fucking can be a very fun part of dynamics, and that is not a consent violation if done the right way, correct?
Right.
So we're talking about the more formal negotiation. No, I don't want that instrument. And I am going to, it's my responsibility. I might not know what we're going to do tonight or where this is going to go. I might not have an idea. I have a responsibility to try to foresee what potential things might happen, address them with you ahead of time. By the way, I'm saying you as if we are not in a relationship. We don't negotiate anymore because we already know what's okay. I'm talking about you metaphorically as a play partner that I don't have a lot of experience with. If I think I might be interested or might be wanting to play with a certain toy or any number of those, I need to bring those up now. Mm-hmm. And if once the play starts, I think to myself, oh, I forgot to ask about this one thing that all of a sudden sounds fun. Well, guess what? I can play with it next time. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of asking at the time. If you ask the submissive at the time and they say yes, there is consent there. But I think the submissive or the bottom is in a vulnerable, when they're in a vulnerable state, they've technically consented. You're probably not going to get in trouble for it. But I don't know if they really consented and with the type of consent that you want to be responsible. Do you agree?
Yeah, I don't like mid-scene negotiations at all. And I specifically mentioned that when I'm playing with people. No, I want to correct you because we do negotiate. We just don't negotiate at length anymore. Like, we pretty much know what's on the table for stuff. But if I'm feeling fatigued or I'm having a pain situation or I'm just having a, you know, anything, fill in the blank, tummy trouble or whatever, we negotiate those on the fly before every time we do something, which is constantly. So the checking in happens. And that is a form of negotiation. It's just not the big formal drawn out one that you would do with a new partner.
No, that's true. So we do. Mm-hmm. Now, there are times when you can do things that, I want to make sure I explain this properly. Mm-hmm. There are times when you can do things that have not been agreed upon or even contradict what you've agreed upon within the context of a scene. Mm-hmm. One of your tops, and you go out and find yourself a good old-fashioned sadist, mm-hmm. could tell you that if you take these three strokes without screaming, then you don't get it. Then he's not going to give you any more. Uh-huh. And then they gives you the three strokes, and you don't scream, and he says, nah, I changed my mind.
I'm going to give you three more.
I'm going to give you three more.
Right.
Okay, that is not a consent violation.
Right.
Right? Because it's within the context of you've agreed to this instrument, you've agreed that you have a safe word to stop, you have the ability at that point to say, no, I cannot take any more than three. Mm-hmm. And if you've negotiated consensual non-consent, they might say, well, I'm going to give them to you anyways, and then you say red, and then it stops. Mm-hmm. As long as you're within those confines of what's been established ahead of time, there is flexibility in there to play. Like I said, I don't want to mm-hmm. present myself as this completely Puritan, so by the book that you're not really having fun if you like to play on the edge, because uh-huh. playing on the edge is fun.
Right. But the trust is there that you won't go too far. And if it gets to the point where I say forward, then everything stops.
Right. You always have that ability.
Right.
So there is flexibility to mm-hmm. have fun. Mm-hmm. Now, what's interesting, though, I never do that, do I?
Well, you have.
I've done it a couple times to keep you on guard.
Yeah.
But for me, and this has nothing to do with trust as much as it's the fun of the game, mm-hmm. is that I personally, when I give you orders or instructions or challenges with consequences, when you succeed at the thing I ask you to do, mm-hmm. my response is usually, ah, fuck.
Yeah.
You win. Mm-hmm. And I'm not required to do that.
Right.
I decide. Like, when we're playing, we're doing a scene within the guidelines that we've agreed upon. I decide what's going to happen. It's not up to you. I can decide to throw away those rules at any point.
Right. But I've played with other tops that...
That do.
That do often. And it, the game is designed that I will fail. So...
And to that's me...
That's also fun. So.
Sure, and you have fun with that. Uh-huh. I personally don't like the game that way. Mm-hmm. Because I think it's more fun for you if there's more at stake. Uh-huh. If you're having to not scream for 5 lashes, mm-hmm. I think there's more... I think there... How do I say it? I think you're going to have more enjoyment if you think you have something to win or lose.
Yeah.
Where if it doesn't matter... It's not going to affect the outcome of what I do next. The reward and penalties are still random. Then why even try? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like if you play poker and you're into playing serious poker and people say, hey, let's play poker, but not for real money. We're just going to play for make-believe chips. No poker player in the world is going to enjoy that. That's stupid. Like, that's not even fun, even recreationally. Mm-hmm. There's nothing at stake. So my perspective has always been, I'm going to establish clearly defined rules mm-hmm. with rewards and punishments and consequences and victories. And if you pass whatever I put in front of you, you get the reward I offer. Mm-hmm. Now, I have... a couple times dismissed with that, but it's only enough to remind you that I can. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think I've even told you each time that.
Yeah, you do.
I don't want to do this, but I want to remind you that I can. And you go, oh shit.
Yeah.
But that's a that is a type of trust. Because mm-hmm. typically when I establish the rules, you can trust that you're going to get what you have coming, good or bad.
Good or bad, yep.
What about... when you are meeting somebody mm-hmm. and you're new to the scene?
Yeah.
How do you establish trust? It could be, or it could appear to be a bit of a catch-22. You have to trust them in order for them to establish trust. So how do you navigate that?
Well, first off, you do your negotiation with your clothes on. You talk to people in public spaces. Definitely check into their background. Talk to other people that have played with them. Ask to watch them play with somebody if that's mm-hmm. available. And then set up a safe call if you're going to meet them in private somewhere. Let somebody know where you're going to be, who you're going to be with, and when to check in, and when you should be done, so that you can say, hey, it's still going good, or I'm spending the night, or I'm done, I'm on my way home, and I'm safe.
And I think it's important is that you also let that person know that there's a check-in call that
absolutely.
That I gave my friend your address where I'm going to be mm-hmm. and let them know that if they have a problem with that, red flag, don't play with them.
Not trustworthy.
Period.
Yep.
They should want you to do that. And in fact, if you don't do that, that's not a compliment to them. Mm-hmm. They should actually sit you down and say, okay, you're new. Let me explain what you should do.
Right.
Nothing's going to happen with me, but you can't just automatically trust the next person. So here's what I want you to do next time.
Right.
That's what their approach should be, correct?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So when you do these things, you don't put them in a position where they can violate your trust. Mm-hmm. Like, you're just not vulnerable. And even the person who might otherwise have been not trustworthy, you take away their ability to violate. Mm-hmm. Not that a person can't violate in a situation, but all of a sudden they become incredibly vulnerable. Mm-hmm. What about... what about presenting yourself as someone who has a voice and is not a doormat? Are you less of a victim or a potential victim if you are confident and sure of yourself? Is there, I mean, I'm asking, this is not me, this is not a leading question I'm asking you. Is there a way that a new submissive can be less vulnerable?
Well, knowing what you want and not presenting it that you are a blank slate and you want somebody to teach you the ropes or whatever, like, it's, go be methodical about it. Talk about, you want to play with a violet wand, you want to try this thing for this period of time, or something like that. Don't give them options to just, oh, we'll do whatever you want. Like, that is not a good way to extend trust or to negotiate proactively.
And don't be afraid to say no. Mm-hmm. Don't think that you have to please the person.
Right.
I mean, if you have a relationship with them, you may totally get off on pleasing them. Mm-hmm. But that's probably not the mindset your first time, right?
No, definitely.
The mindset should be first and foremost taking care of you. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, don't be afraid to say no. I mean, if they say, oh my God, this is my favorite toy in the whole world, I love this one, that should have zero bearing on whether or not you decide they're going to use it or not. Mm-hmm. If they have a good time with you, you can always do it in the future.
Or right? Try a test stroke, and it doesn't have to be part of the scene. It can be part of the negotiation to try that one thing, one time.
But be clear about what you want. Like you said, that's not the time that you're trying not to hurt their feelings.
Right.
Yeah, especially if you're new. I would say if you're new, it is basically somewhere between 99 and 100% about what you want. Uh-huh. Because if they've been around a while, this is just another night for them that they're enjoying someone new and probably loving it. But it's not about them. You're the new one.
Right.
It's about you. They should err towards less, not more. You know, remember what I told you when we first played?
Yeah.
What did I tell you?
That it would be lighter than what I might be accustomed to, because it's easier to stop and come back to play again than to cause harm and not be able to do it anymore.
Yeah, exactly. We can always go harder next time.
Yep.
That's easy. Mm-hmm. What we can't do is take it back if I've went too far. Mm-hmm. And I don't know your level. Nobody knows your level when you're new.
Right.
What your definition of hard and easy are, that's almost irrelevant that you're using words to describe it, because there's such a range of people out there. Mm-hmm. So they should be erring towards less. And just think about you. Protect yourself.
Yeah.
And by the way, none of this means it's not going to be fun. Mm-hmm. It just means you can ease into this. The whole idea of the kink buffet, the concept of our name, is that you can always go back to the buffet next time and over again. You don't have to gorge yourself that first time. Mm-hmm. So, it's not going to be not fun, but it doesn't have to be everything you've ever wanted it to be that first time either.
Well, and every time you play is another stepping stone towards building the trust that'll let you have the freedom to do all sorts of fun things without having to rehash the same territory over and over again.
Right. I mean, we don't. Mm-hmm. We talk about things briefly, specific to your fibro and what things might work. Mm-hmm. But we, like you said, we don't have a formal negotiation. I know you now.
Right.
And I know the playground I can play in. Mm-hmm. But it took time. Didn't happen overnight.
Right.
I think we covered the basics.
I like it.
I know we could drag trust out for 3 hours easily, but I think we actually condensed better than we've done at times.
Yeah. Tell us how you build trust with your play partners. You can reach out to us on social media. Our contacts are on kinkbuffet.com, or you can send us an email at kinkbuffet@gmail.com.
And I like to hear how we got it wrong. Other DOMs out there, tell me that I'm ignorant of how this whole process works. I'm open to processing anything, any criticism you have.
Change my mind.
Change my mind.
Until next time.
Bye.